land and to live righteously. It's time for another episode of the Culture Hall. It's episode number 220, wherein we're going to be talking about eating disorders. Here with me right now is Jesse Shepherd. You're going to give your own intro because you got all sorts of letters after your name. And if I try and explain what those letters are, people will be like, no, what is he saying? So go ahead.
So I'm Jesse Shepherd, and I'm a licensed clinical mental health counselor, which is a whole lot of words to say I'm a therapist.
Yeah.
I have a office in the Cottonwood Heights area.
So here locally in the state of Utah.
Yeah.
But I already know this about you, so I'll offer it here at the beginning, but then we can chat about it at the end as well. If people have questions for you about anything that we talk about, they can reach out to you via email, I would imagine.
Yeah. So Jesse@BlueCloverTherapy.com, or you can just go to BlueCloverTherapy.com. And I have all my contact information there.
And people can find it there.
Yeah.
So I want to talk all about eating disorders and sort of how that can be associated with the LDS culture, certainly something that we talk a ton about here in the Cultural Hall. So I want to give people kind of an idea of what you want to talk about while you're here, the different things we'll talk about, and then let's just go. We'll go chronologically. We'll go for a little bit, then we'll take a break, and then we'll come back and do all the rest of the stuff.
Okay. We're going to talk about different diagnoses of eating disorders.
So that's like what kinds, right? Like
yeah.
Because bulimic is different than anorexic, but they always get lumped together.
Yeah, and they're not.
Okay.
They're completely different. And there's a ton of other ones as well that's important to know. We're going to also talk about signs you can look for in your friends and family, things that would be concerning, and then what to do and not to do.
Is it also things, too, where you could, like, self-denial? Like, sometimes you're like, I don't have it. It's not an eating disorder. I could eat at any time. Like, it's not really an eating disorder. Like, are some of these things going to help people maybe
self-aware? Yeah, absolutely. Well, if you are self-aware enough to, like, notice these things, I think it's wonderful, and you should go find a therapist.
Okay. Be self.
Go do it. No, I mean, I think it's amazing if you'd be able to notice these things. And because sometimes we get wrapped up in our own self-denial. And so if you're not, that's awesome.
Before we get into all of it, though, I want to give people a little bit of an idea where you're at. You're from here, state of Utah.
Yes.
Born and raised.
Yep, in Kearns.
We'll have Jesse back as another episode because you're actually not a member of the church.
No. Yeah. I've lived here my entire life and I know about the LDS church and kind of exploring it and those different things. But not officially a member.
And everyone's like, get her. I get it. Everyone calm down a little bit.
He's working on it.
But maybe, I mean, that's you're in the talks right now with the missionaries and going to church.
Yeah, I think anybody who has to work with anyone who's LDS or any religion for that matter should know about the religion. And so that's kind of part of my exploratory.
So is it, if I can ask, and hopefully I can get you to come back and we'll talk about it in a full episode about that idea of kind of investigating the church.
Mm-hmm.
But is it? So are you investigating for clearly clinical purposes, or is it actually maybe something that you'd be interested in doing?
A little of both, because I don't know, maybe I'm getting older and trying to figure myself out, figure out faith. I've never really had a faith.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's interesting to kind of hit that spiritual piece and kind of experiment with what it would be like to be of any type of religion, that kind of thing. So just trying to figure stuff out,
cool.
I guess, in my journey as well, as long as, you know, I can tie it into clinical, then I'd be like,
I wasn't real. Maybe I am. I might be interested, but maybe clinical. Give
it's
me 50-50 on this. Yeah. So hopefully we can get you back and talk with you in a whole episode of that, investigating the church. But let's go eating disorders. I want to know, is it the most popular, if we can use that term, the anorexia and bulimia are the most popular ones, most known about, or?
They're most known about. I wouldn't say popular because that, I don't, That sounds weird to me.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, I don't know.
Everybody's being bulimic.
It's so cool. So anorexia is where you can't maintain a healthy weight.
Okay.
And these are the ones that we typically think of. They're super skinny. You can see their bones, all of that. Unable to maintain any type of weight. And there's different types, like as we diagnose, binge and purge, restriction, that go along with that, but mainly the...
So binge and purge is the folks that just eat, and then throw it up.
Yes.
And then restriction is just, I can't eat that.
They won't. They'll go days without food.
Hmm.
Whereas bulimia usually is a normal weight, but there will be a large amount of food ingested, mm-hmm. and then some sort of purging type. So either throwing up or using diet pills or laxatives or Ipecac or... exercise, stuff like some sort of something to combat what they just did. And there's usually a lot of guilt with that.
So you just said something that I think is sort of a fascinating thing. So it could be an eating disorder to eat a bunch and then just exercise like crazy.
Yes,
to get to get that weight back down.
Yes. So it's one of the ones that, because everybody, you're exercising, you're looking so great.
Right, right. So, like, I just eat what I want and then I exercise to get it off. That's not an eating disorder. You were at the gym for 7 hours today.
Yeah, like, this is a problem. And what we're looking for with those type of behaviors is if they're eating and then they feel shame, guilt, embarrassment, anything like that, and then they're using exercise as a way to reduce what they just did, or, that kind of thing. And we are looking for people who are spending hours and hours at the gym and kind of obsessed about those different things.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what else? What other kinds of?
Okay, so we have binge eating disorder, which is where you eat massive amounts of food, but you don't have that other behavior to combat it. So you just feel a massive amount of guilt with that. Avoidant resistant food intake disorder. So that's like... and we typically think of girls. We're like, I can't eat that. Mm-hmm. Oh, no, I won't. I didn't. Oh, I'm just getting too big. Or that's too many calories, that kind of thing. You do that enough, and if there's enough mental instability behind that, that's when it becomes a disorder.
Okay.
You have purging disorder, where you just vomit or use Ipecac or that kind of a thing without necessarily the binge part. So you're eating normal meals.
But even just that, that's just too much.
It's just too much for you. and then we have night eating disorder, which I looked at the DSM last night just to make sure that I had all my criteria set up. And I'm like, oh, my gosh, like I have this disorder. It's basically where you eat massive amounts of food in the middle of the night.
Yes.
So I'm a nighttime eater. And so, like, I try to keep carrots and stuff so I can, like... If I feel better if I ate like an entire bag of carrots,
as opposed to entire bag of potato chips,
exactly,
for example.
Exactly, because it's like, I just ate a bunch of carrots. But so that's, and that tends to be kind of more of a subconscious thing because you're usually half asleep when you're doing those things.
Huh.
So it's an interesting one.
Yeah, for sure.
We have pica, which is where you're eating.
No, never even heard of it.
Yeah, so it's pica if you went to the University of Utah.
Okay.
If you're back east, it's pica.
Okay.
Basically,
you say the pica and I say the pica.
Exactly.
It's eating disorders. Let's call the whole thing food.
You'll separate a whole group of therapists and be like, well, you say it like this.
Yeah. It's Nevada. It's Nevada, you jerk. That's right.
Exactly.
I digress. Anyway, what is it?
So it's where you're eating things that are not edible. So dirt, chalk, I've worked with folks who ate the couch cushion fluff from inside the couch.
Wow, really?
Yeah.
I would think that would get dangerous really quick.
Because,
like, your body doesn't process couch cushion.
Yeah, exactly. And so you get blockages and it's so bad. So that can be quite dangerous. And it gets dangerous, like you're saying, quick. Because unless it's, like, little amounts, it depends on the severity of the symptoms and all of that. And then last, we have rumination disorder, which is basically you spend a lot of time planning and thinking about your meals, how to avoid meals, making sure they're small, stuff like that.
It's food planning. Yeah. I'm just meal planning. That's all.
It's just a food diary, right? Well, it becomes an issue if you're spending more time doing that than what we should be doing.
Because there are on some of these, right? Like, people will be like, well, there's nothing wrong with exercising a lot. No, there's nothing wrong with exercising a lot.
Yeah.
But there is a point where it becomes a disorder.
Exactly. And what we're looking for is if you're having issues at work, home, school, if it's getting in the way of friendships, social interactions, that's when it becomes a disorder.
I want to back up a little bit. So we just sort of listed a bunch of those. Is there, and you sort of lent to it a little bit, like anytime that you're feeling shame or anything like that, mm-hmm. Is there causality? Like, hey, this is what we know causes eating disorders, or how do we get to the point where eating couch cushions or eating in the middle of the night, right? I mean, yeah, like that seems like a valid question.
Yeah. So, okay. So any type of trauma, physical, emotional, or sexual, we start to see eating disorders come up. Eating disorders are a way of control. So okay. We want to control our body. We want to feel like we have control in life. Like I talk to parents of toddlers, uh-huh. and they're like they won't eat anything, and you know they. This is gross, but they won't go to the bathroom in the bathroom, you know, those kind of things.
Uh-huh.
And a toddler can only control what they eat and
where they go to the bathroom.
Exactly. And so that's their form of control. Well, as we get older, and especially if we've experienced something traumatic, we realize that we don't have any control. You know, we could get cancer any day. We could have a loved one die, mm-hmm. you know, all of these different things. And so as we try to gain control, sometimes that comes out in an eating disorder where we feel like we have control over our body because we know we can make ourselves hungry. After a while, that hunger feeling can be comforting.
It's interesting as we were talking about this. So my divorce was fairly traumatic, and I as I'm sort of thinking back about it, I don't think it was eating disorder, but the one thing that I felt like I could control was what I ate.
Yes.
And so I became very exact in the hard times of dealing with being divorced, going, my meal at 5:30 is this, my meal at 8:30 is this, and I eat right at 5:30 and I eat right at 8:30. And what worked out for me was I actually got in pretty good shape. But
nice.
but it became at one point it became exhausting where I just was like this is too much.
Yeah.
But it is without even recognizing, now being able to look in retrospect, being self-aware, going, hey, yeah, I did that. I don't know if it was an eating disorder.
Well,
but certainly it was something where I was trying to exercise control of what I felt like I had no control of everything else.
Exactly. And sometimes it's just to gain control. And we do that. We socially will plan meals and that kind of thing. And that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
But like I said, it's you're really looking for defects in any other type of aspect of their work, home, social life, stuff like that.
And something else that you brought up that I had never considered either, but it makes sense with it being a control thing. I had never considered eating disorders coming from a sexual trauma. Certainly, mm-hmm. I think that most people think that eating disorders come from that one jerk kid in your class who's like, hey, fatty. And you're like, I am fat. And then, you know, boy or girl, you come home, mom, am I fat? You know, or the one parent who was particularly insensitive about the weight of a child.
Yes.
And that seems to be where I think we stereotypically go from it, but it can be, like you said, any sort of trauma. A sexual trauma is something I'd never considered to be a cause of an eating disorder.
Yeah. So with sexual trauma, oftentimes we feel like our bodies have abandoned us, kind of went against what we would have wanted.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes people their bodies will react in a way that it makes them feel like they were, like their bodies wanted it, but they didn't. Like, just
because of the physiological sensations of sexual satisfaction, right?
Exactly. And your body will just naturally do that, even if your brain is like, like, I don't want this. Like, you know, you're trying to fight back. And so if your body has abandoned you, the best, you know, you start thinking this way where, oh, well, I can control, you know, what I eat and what I put into it and how hungry it is. And so it gives us that sense of controlling our body when at a time we weren't able to. Yeah.
That's a fascinating. I don't know. Now I'm just thinking about like that whole, Anyway, I'd never thought of that as a cause of an eating disorder. And then beyond that, just the natural instinct to try and take control.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah. It's interesting. Huh?
Yeah. I'm absolutely fascinated. We've sort of talked about these different, types and kinds and stuff like that. I'm going to propose that maybe, well, let's get into some signs, and then I think when we come back, we'll take a break here in a little bit, and we'll talk about maybe what we can do for folks, or maybe that'll come across in what we're doing as far as signs go. But let's go there. So I notice that someone is losing a lot of weight. mm-hmm. would be a huge sign.
Yes.
Other things and how we can be and how we can be aware of it.
So if they complain a lot about problem areas, and usually their problem areas aren't typical to the rest of us. So like, I think the majority of us would like, oh, what's a problem area? Oh, my stomach or my butt or something like that. We're
right.
We're like, oh, I need to work on these things. But they'll often look at their wrists.
By the way, I'd never say that my butt is a problem area. It's actually
your butt is perfect.
It's so. Actually a strength area. So it's two. I'm sorry.
Okay, so you'd have different points you need to work on, I guess.
So, but trouble areas that wouldn't be to everybody else, like what? Like the fat on my cheekbones, or is that the kind of thing they're talking about?
So, cheekbones, double chins. Like, if anyone can produce a double chin, if you put your...
I can do a triple.
Yeah,
like,
whoa.
Like, you see that? Look at that.
It's beautiful. I love it.
Three. One, two, three.
So, wrists. They'll look at their wrists and say their wrists are fat. And you'll get this more in males because of superhero type syndrome stuff where they'll look at their shoulders and be like, well, my shoulders aren't, you know, big enough, or, you know, I'm sloping or weak, or that kind of thing. Like you said, dramatic weight loss and wearing baggy clothes. We like to think that if people are losing a lot of weight, they're, you know, wearing clothes that are tight fitting, or they're trying to show off their thinness. But it's usually not the case. They're usually still trying to hide their body because at that point, if they're losing enough weight, they don't believe that they're thin enough. And so by hiding their body with different layers of clothing and sweatshirts and all of that, it kind of gives that illusion that they're, you know,
they still
can hide.
Yeah.
Yeah. So looking for that kind of stuff. Over-exercising is a huge one, just like we had talked about.
Is there like a... I guess this is going to apply differently for everyone, but there's got to be like a standard, right? Like 2 hours. That is probably anything more than 2 hours could be excessive, or you know what I'm saying?
Like, I mean, it depends on who it is. Because if you're like a professional athlete, that's your job. So you're
it's conditional. I know a lot of people though, and now I'm sort of embarrassed that I just asked that question because people are looking for that. Well, what is too much? Well, how do I know? Well, I think it might be.
Mm-hmm.
I think that this is going on with my son or daughter, but I need someone else to tell me that this is a problem so that I can identify it. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, okay. So like I've had mothers where they're like, every time my daughter eats this or that, she has to go for a run.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so then we have to look at what's actually going on. So after talking with her, we had figured out that she was feeling self-conscious about these guys that would make comments when she'd eat.
Mm-hmm.
And so her coping mechanism was to run.
Mm-hmm.
So that wasn't necessarily that she was trying to lose weight. She was just trying to cope with her emotions, which I think running is a wonderful way to do that.
Right.
That doesn't necessarily mean that she has an eating disorder.
Okay.
So you really want to look at why they're doing what they're doing. If they're doing it strictly because they overate and they want to reduce that calorie intake, or which is not how it works at all.
Yeah.
But then that's what we're looking for.
Okay.
Yeah. What else? Oh, frequent trips to the restroom. Like
sure.
If they're vomiting, things like that, or if they're using laxatives.
Vomit breath is another good one, right?
Yep, that's a good one.
I mean, it's probably a little more obvious of some of those. And I also want to point out, because undoubtedly I'll get attacked for being jokey about this.
Yeah.
The reason why you're here is because I recognize that this is a serious issue.
Yes.
I have had friends and friends' families who have been affected by eating disorders. I don't think it's funny. I'm just trying to... have this information be shared in an entertaining way.
This would be a very serious downer type of a podcast if you weren't here. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and show in podcast form. Just, but that's just a technicality. Don't worry about it.
Sorry.
No, you're fine. No, that's me. That's I have a podcast disorder wherein I have to call the show all the time.
Oh, okay. Oh, good. Okay. So negative statements about food, weight, all of those things.
Like what? Give me an example of a negative statement about food.
Yeah, I'm really getting fat and you're not getting fat. Or, oh my gosh, this has this many calories, or
But some of that is just being conscious, right? Like,
sure.
Like maybe, hey, yeah, I mean, sorry, maybe you are getting a little big. Or, yeah, that peanut butter and chocolate shake at Cold Stone Creamery does have 3,000 calories, and that is outlandish. So again,
I
as people sort of listen to this, I think that they have to, it's probably got to be more than a thing that someone is saying, and to not rush to, oh my gosh, you have an eating disorder, because that's another side of things where it's like, she's really taking care of herself. Yeah, she's
skinny,
anorexic.
So, yeah. It's you want multiple symptoms. Also physical symptoms. So hair loss, dizziness, fainting. If they have sunken eyes, if they have bruising on their knuckles.
What does bruising on your knuckles come from?
So first, when your body, with the variance in food intake and how you're kind of destroying your body by over-exercising, laxatives, throwing up, all those different things. The body tries to take minerals from the bones. And so your bones start becoming weak. And then your heart starts to have a difficult time with that because it's not getting any of the minerals that it needs or fuel that it needs, right? So it starts having a difficult time. And what happens is you'll get blood pooling places. So so our joints are one that has blood that pools in it.
Okay.
They also get it in the eye, and their eyes can actually start to bleed.
Oh my gosh.
It's pretty gnarly stuff. And that's why your eyes sink in.
So like if your eyes are bleeding. That's pretty extreme, but I had no idea that could be a thing.
Yeah. And you know, you work with it long enough, you can kind of pinpoint a little bit. So if I have a person come in and they're wearing a big sweatshirt and their eyes are sunken in, they have bruised knuckles, I'm like, oh, cool, what's going on? You know, like,
What are we talking
about? Yeah, because your body starts to break down. We think of like anorexia and we're like, oh, well, they starve themselves to death.
Mm-hmm.
That's actually not what happens. Your body just starts to break down, and it's death by body neglect is what they call it.
Okay.
And
that sounds terrible.
Yeah. And it very painful.
Yeah.
Very painful to have it happen. So, and the further you get down in an eating disorder without any type of help, the harder it is to come back because your body starts to, like, if it eats food and you normally throw it up, it'll start automatically throwing it up without you necessarily initiating the
Really? So then as you try and come back from it, it becomes that much harder?
Yeah. And that's when you want to go to, you know, the hospital, Center for Change down in Provo is a wonderful inpatient. And those type of things that really...
And there are places like that all over the country,
oh,
right?
Oh, absolutely. Okay. All over the country. Yeah. And you can look them up, but they're just inpatient. But when you're outpatient, we're really looking at these symptoms that are still conscious and still not necessarily body controlled yet.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Death by what neglect?
Body
neglect. Neglect.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Yeah, it's bad news. Yeah.
You know, you talk about how you have had these patients that come in. How heartbreaking is that when someone comes in and their eyes are sunken and they're, you know, like a shell of a person that they could, like, how do you, that to me seems so difficult.
Yeah, it's, the thing is, I'm in a position to help them.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm there to assess if they need to go to the hospital or what's going on. And so I really like to look at it from a logical point of view of what can we do creating an entire plan for it. But, you know, there's been times where, like, the patient leaves and I just bawl because I know what they're capable of. And it just is so sad seeing them do that. But then the cool thing is I get to work with them and, you know, seeing people even like a month from when they started or 6 months or a year, and they are a normal functioning person and they feel healthy and happy with themselves. It's an incredible feeling.
Hmm.
So,
yeah, that would be like helping people in a whole different way, I think, because you're literally saving their lives.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a cool process.
That's pretty rad.
They're doing it though. That's the cool thing is they have the strength to do it. I'm just there to,
yeah, because if they choose not to do any and not to do any of it, then what good does it do?
Exactly. So the cool thing is watching them gain their strength.
That's pretty rad.
Yeah.
What else before? Should we take a break and then talk about culture stuff? Why this would be?
Yeah, let's talk about culture.
Okay, let's take a break real quick. We'll come back in the second half. We'll talk about culture, and then we'll talk about what you should do and what not to do if you think that there's someone in your life who is dealing with an eating disorder. That's coming back in the second block of the Cultural Hall.
Running a small business today can be difficult enough. Imagine all the work you have to do to market it, Imagine the hours you put in to create promotional materials for it. Now, imagine a partner that can help you with all of that and more. Imagine Lennon Design. Lennon Design is your partner in business when you need a professional look at a price you can afford. Whether it's websites, advertising media, promotional materials, and more, Lennon Design can help you promote your business. When you need creative, affordable designs, let it be Lennon Design. Call 801-699-3022 or visit LennonDesign.com.
Utah's newest upscale catering company is now accepting bookings for the upcoming holiday and wedding season. Slick Rock Catering masterfully combines exquisite food, beautiful presentation, high-level service, and careful attention to create a special occasion that will be remembered. From award-winning food, event planning, decorating, to providing highly trained servers, Slick Rock Catering will help you make your next special event a huge success. Contact them at slickrockcatering.com.
Dan the Laptop Man here, and it's time for another PC Laptop's Bedtime Story. Once upon a time, Brian was looking for a new computer. He searched far and wide from north to south, and even took his quest online. But he had yet to find the PC of his dreams, and was feeling sad. If only I could find the perfect computer with a lifetime warranty to match, he thought to himself. But then Brian stumbled upon a magical store with a friendly staff and a selection galore. Inside, he knew he had found what he'd been searching for all along, a blazing fast PC with a lifetime warranty his heart had desired. Brian returned home, his new PC laptop's desktop in tow. And should it come time to upgrade, Brian knows where to go. PC Laptops, where we really do love Brian and you. PCLaptops.com.
Time for the second half of the Cultural Hall. It's episode number 220, where we're visiting with Jessie Shepherd, who is a therapist but has lots of letters, so don't discount who she is just because I said therapist. A lot of people go,
I like therapist.
But a lot of people are like, therapist, so does that mean she's, you know what I'm saying?
Oh.
Like, they instantly go, it's like life coach, right? Where it's like, yeah, I'm a life coach, sure.
I do get asked if I'm a massage therapist.
Right.
I'm like, no.
I mean, I'm thinking about adding it to what I do, but... I want to talk about the culture behind it, how LDS culture probably applies to eating disorders,
mm-hmm.
And then what we can do and what we cannot do. Should we know, should we be someone that we think has an eating disorder, or should we know someone?
Yeah.
So let's go there. Culture.
Culture.
What's the deal?
Are you going to get fussy with me on this one?
I might get a little fussy with you.
Good. I like it. Okay, so control.
Okay.
Hear me out first.
Okay. Control.
So control. So the idea behind the church is no sex before marriage, right?
Okay.
And no gluttony, like of overeating.
Like, yeah, moderation in all things,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, exactly.
Except for no sex, coffee, and alcohol. That's not moderation. It's none.
That's nothing. But the problem is that as human beings, we want to eat sugar, fat, and salt all the time.
So, oh, my gosh.
So much, right?
Are you... sugar fiend? Or are you a salt and fat fiend?
Well,
because I am a sugar fiend.
Sugar is delicious.
Yeah.
But then like a good, I don't know, bag of chips or something. It's amazing.
Yeah. Right now, like ice cream with a thing of potato.
You're talking about eating disorders.
I'm sorry. Okay. So I'm following you here. So this idea that we deny ourselves from so many things.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, so, but our bodies want these things. Our body wants to have sex, right?
Mm-hmm.
But we're making that, we're restricting ourselves to where we don't have sex before marriage.
Okay.
Right? Okay. So this whole idea behind control and being able to control ourselves and our bodies is exactly what we're trying to achieve with an eating disorder. We're trying to gain control of whatever the situation is by controlling our bodies.
Huh.
You following me?
Okay.
Okay. So, and then when we give in to these things, because we eventually have to eat or... you know, whatever, we have self-hatred, and there's disciplinary action within the church if you do certain things.
Yeah, it's the same thing like, oh man, I had sex before I got married, I hate myself, I'm worthless, all that kind of stuff, right?
Exactly. And then you have to make up for it and do various things. And so it's this idea that...
Ooh, I've never thought of this. Like, sorry, keep going.
Isn't this
sorry,
interesting?
Let me not interrupt.
So, yeah, so it's a giving a sense of control. And so if we can control ourselves in this moderation piece and, you know, not having sex, all of these different things, we can do it with an eating disorder as well. And so after a while, it starts to become comforting to know that we can control what we put in our bodies. We can control if our bodies are hungry or, you know, how much we exercise or that kind of thing.
Okay.
Yeah. How do you feel
now,
about that?
But now I'm trying to flip it back on the thing, because that sounds, I mean, as far as an eating disorder, it sounds bad, but like when we try and apply it back, so now help me apply it back. I guess I'll use the example of the sex thing. So, right, like you, because within the church, we would say, hey, the reason why we're doing this is we're trying to be in control of our own spirit, right? Instead
yes.
of, you know, it's the natural man is this enemy to God, but the spirit should be the one that's in control. It's why we fast. It's why we look for the higher law. So how do we then apply that back without it being a damaging thing, right? Like,
yeah.
Can you still feel the godly sorrow of the, like the premarital sex that leads you to not want to do it again without having the damaging part of it that makes you go, I'm such a worthless, horrible person?
Well, okay. So I think it's all in how it's done. So if you...
And maybe let's talk about the food part, not the sex part, because that way we're talking apples for apples.
We keep it. Okay. So as far as like eating,
okay.
If you have eaten something that you know you shouldn't eat, as we all have,
right?
You know,
this morning I had 3 chocolate donuts for breakfast, not one because that wouldn't have been enough, and not 2 because that's where I was full. There was a third one, and I was like, well, no one else is going to eat it.
It's going to sit here.
Yeah.
Go to waste.
Yeah.
So, okay. So if you take that and you really internalize it and you make it into it turns into I did something bad to I am bad. Right.
Okay.
That is when it really becomes a problem. Now, if you take something and you say, oh, that was bad, I need to repair it, like within the church, I think that's kind of what they're going for, where you did something, right?
That we turn away from it.
Yeah.
We try not to do it again. We say sorry if it hurts someone else.
Exactly. And so you're trying to remedy what you did, but that doesn't necessarily make you a bad person.
Okay.
The problem is that is not often, like, as humans, we internalize everything. Everything in our environment that has happened to us, we try to apply it to ourselves. And so if you start moving that into, I am a bad person, that's when you start kind of freaking out in your head, where you're like, oh, I got to control something. I have to control something. I can't control if I have sex before marriage. I can't control if I eat 3 donuts for breakfast.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm a terrible person. That's when we start getting into the bad stuff.
Mm. It's self-hatred.
Yep. It's bad news.
Okay.
Don't do it.
So then, sorry, what next then?
So perfectionism.
Okay.
So I love the Relief Society. Love them. I think, okay, because we weren't really going to talk about my personal church stuff. But
we can. This is a perfect place to apply it.
So I love it. The church really focuses on family. And I love that. And the Relief Society, it really embodies that, because they're, you know, giving meals to people and whatnot, right?
Uh-huh.
The problem is everybody's trying to appear perfect. Everybody knows how to sew and do crafts and cook well and all of that. But we're all humans, and we all have faults and things that we are just flat out not good at, right? So we all want to be these things, and we all see people in the church that we want to kind of emulate and be like, right? But when we take that to where we want to hide, we are get embarrassed by the things that we're not good at, that's when we start getting into some bad things. So
okay.
Like if you have an eating disorder, or you have a mental illness, depression, anxiety, that kind of thing, and you spend a ton of time.
Oh, we don't talk about that.
That's right. Do you have anxiety? No. What?
No, I am able to perfectly manage everything that me and my family of 7 kids does without problem. Why do you ask?
Exactly. And having an issue makes it be like, well, you you are not, you know, taking in the Lord like you should, or you're not as connected as everybody else.
And we shame the crap out of people about it.
Exactly. And that's not okay. It's okay to be a little awkward and not know what to do and not be able, I can't sew to save my life. Mm-hmm. I bought a sewing machine and I broke. Oh, my, I did. I tried so hard, and I'm terrible at it, right? But now I'm just going to embrace that because I don't want to learn that skill at all. That's not my thing. So embrace the imperfections of us, I think, should be very much a part of things, because then we don't internalize them and make them, you know, make us into terrible people.
This is interesting, though, because I think where this seems to come from anywhere is that we go, you know, there's scriptures that talk about, you know, we are given weak things and weak things can be made strong in the Lord, right? So it's like, well, sure, that's weak, but I can make it stronger with the help from God. So I must not either be, like you say, tapping into God enough or trying hard enough on my own.
Yes. Which is mean.
Yes.
Because I am never going to learn to sew.
Well, you could. You just aren't trying.
I'm not trying hard enough. Oh, I should really
connect more. No, I joke, and that's terrible, because that is what people internalize and go, it must not be that I am this.
Exactly. And it becomes like self-hatred again.
Yeah.
That's not okay.
No.
No. Terrible.
So
the last one here that I have is modesty.
Okay.
Okay.
This is an interesting thing, as I saw this on the list as well.
Yeah. So modesty, we have taken women's body, specifically women's body, and we've tried to kind of desexualize it a little bit, right? So
Yeah, because otherwise the men who don't have control over themselves, no, really.
I'm laughing because I know.
If she wears something sexy, I can't help but have terrible thoughts.
Exactly. Right. So that's the problem, is we're not embracing the sexuality of it. We're not embracing that we have curves and that we have cleavage and all this kind of stuff. Now, I'm not saying you need to like walk around in a bathing suit or something.
Okay.
I don't think that. But I think you can dress modestly without, you know, va-va-vooming it up. I don't know how to say that in a better way.
No, I like the va-va-vooming it up. I think that's clinical. In fact, let me just...
You can just Google that real quick.
Yep. Yeah. Va-va-vooming it up. Hashtag va-va-vooming.
Well, like your skirts can go to your knees or past your knees.
Yeah.
And you can still be a good-looking
absolutely.
Girl, right?
Absolutely.
And I think this has kind of turned around in recent years, I would say, because I was looking up ways to wear garments with modest clothing without it being so obvious.
Frumpy.
Yeah. Because that's the thing.
That's the thing with women, and it's an unfortunate thing. We've talked about it a little bit here at the Cultural Hall, is that they go, listen, I want the covenants. I want to feel that closeness with God, but I don't want to look like a frumpy, unattractive, boring lady. That's
exactly.
Real. Sorry, that's real talk, everybody.
It's true.
Dudes are like, I wear boxers and a t-shirt anyway. I'm not going to, with the exception of like wanting to wear a tank top occasionally when it's hot, I rarely feel the pains, quote unquote, of garments.
Exactly. And so it's finding ways to be modest and really embrace our body without having to go completely the other way. And so the problem is that when we do start embracing ourselves, embracing our curves and whatnot, sometimes that's looked down upon, and especially the older generation, I would say, in the LDS culture, where it's like, well, you need to wear, that's a little too tight fitting, you know? And so we start to internalize where it's like, well, am I not taking the church in the way that I should? Am I not following the rules? Am I, you know, and we start to, again, self-hate. And that's where we try to find control in other ways. Yeah.
So then what do we do? So, there's someone in your ward, maybe someone in your family. Like, let's talk about what we can do if there is someone that we are worried about, what we can do.
So first off, no shaming, no guilt.
What does that mean? Be really basic, because honestly, yeah. I know that I have been accused, and rightfully so, of shaming before and had not considered it to be shaming what I was doing.
What were you doing?
I was making jokes, but still, like to most people, they were like, yeah, he's... It's completely absurd. Of course, I know I look good, but in a couple of instances, it was where it was genuine shaming, and it was like, oh crap, I'm sorry that I did that. I'm sorry that I was part of an issue for you.
Well, I think it's coming at somebody in a very open and accepting way. I tend to do that naturally. So, but I know it can be taught because I've taught it. So it's basically just trying to realize what it's like being the other person. And so if they are doing these behaviors, if you are concerned about them, there's usually something mentally going on as well, either mm-hmm. concerns with school or work or something. You can kind of see where they're at and what they're going through and come at them with that kind of, I truly care about you, because mm-hmm. you should care about other people.
Yeah, you would hope.
Yeah, and if you're approaching them about this, you should genuinely care about them.
Yeah.
If you don't, have someone else do it, because it comes off rude and
and it's like with anything within the church, beyond like an eating disorder or something like that, right? Like people can smell phony so quick, where it's like,
oh, yeah.
It's so great to have you here, Jesse. It's like, I feel like you're not being honest, pal. So
exactly.
Let's get someone else that really feels like they're excited to have me be here, do the welcoming thing.
Yeah, that one person who talks behind everybody's back.
Yeah.
Don't have
the. You're not the lean-to. You're not the go-to on this.
No. Find that kind, caring person and have them talk to them. And then they need to come and talk to them in a private setting. So you're not doing it.
So not in front of anyone else, right?
No one else at all. Unless they have like a parent or something, but the parent should know what you're going to do.
Right.
And just be very, very honest. You're being nice and rational about it. Be like, hey, I've noticed that when this happens, you do this. Like when we eat, you do, you go to the bathroom or you have vomit breath or, whatever it is. Be nice and rational. It's not, you can feel like you can care for them from your heart, but you cannot express concern from the heart. Does that make sense?
No.
Okay, so you can say, I care about you so much. I want you to be the best, strongest person you can possibly be.
Right.
Okay, that's from the heart. But you can't say, I feel like you are damaging your body and that if you don't get help, you're going to die. Because that's a feeling.
Yeah.
But if you say, hey, you are 20 pounds underweight, your eyes are bleeding and your eyes are sunken in.
Uh-huh.
I think you are going to die. That's more rational, because you can back that up with, this is why I think this is happening.
Look, we can see the blood. Look at this.
Yeah, it's actually happening. I am concerned for you, but this is rationally why I'm concerned for you.
Do people in this situation typically take pretty well when it comes from a place of love and it's rational like that?
Oh, it depends. It really does. Some people will break down and because they've been hiding it for so long, it's a relief to have someone know.
Oh, finally, you noticed. This has been a cry for help, these different things. Please, thank you.
Well, not necessarily a cry for help, I wouldn't say, but that they are doing self-damaging behaviors and that they're going through such turmoil and they're doing it alone.
Okay.
And there's nothing like going through turmoil and doing it alone. Not a single thing. That's the worst thing. And so to be able to have someone acknowledge that and be willing to sit with you in that is remarkable. So, so some people break down and some people are just relieved and some people get really mad.
Yeah. I'm not.
No. And it turns into this big denial thing. Exactly. And so that's where you don't want to get into arguments or anything. You're not arguing with them.
So what do you do at that point, right? Like you have this conversation and it's like, hey, you know what? Here is what I have observed. Mm-hmm. Nuh-uh.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, the natural thing is, hey, look,
yes.
Your eyes are bleeding. You can't tell me that it's not that you're right. That would be and I think probably a fairly commonplace thing that person embarrassed and denies.
Yeah.
So then where do you go from there? Because you still care about the person, but it seems like it would go instantly feeling oriented. If you're trying to be rational, it's like, your eyes are bleeding. No, they're not. Yes, they are. I don't want you to die.
Yeah. So that's where you buddy system it up.
Okay.
So you go, hey, why don't we go see the therapist together? Why don't we go to the doctor?
Okay.
Like if someone's going to come to me for therapy and they have an eating disorder, they need to be working with a doctor or a dietitian.
Oh, really?
They have to be, because I need someone to make sure that the organs aren't going to shut down.
Okay.
And that their BMI is okay and all of that. And they only like once a month, depending on the severity of the situation.
Uh-huh.
for them, for the doctor, and then they'll see me weekly, kind of a thing. But I have people all the time, they buddy system, where they're going to go to the doctor's appointments, and they're both going to have their blood drawn, and they're both going to have their BMIs tested, and they're both going to come in and do an assessment for an eating disorder, simply because they're that support system for them.
Cool.
And so that's again, it goes back to being with someone in the turmoil, sitting with them in the uncomfortableness.
What else? What else should we do or not do?
Oh, let's see. What have we not covered? No convincing. We already kind of went over that. Don't argue with them. Oh, if you only stop. I love this. If you only stop, you'll be healthier. If you only do the... Please, if you just do this, then this will happen.
Uh-huh.
That has never helped ever.
I just checked the history of ever.
Yes.
Never helped.
Never. Like, I mean, like you go to an alcoholic. Well, if you just stop. Mm-hmm. Yeah, uh-huh. That's nothing. That's never worked.
Second to that is, you're such a beautiful person.
Yeah.
You'd stop.
Exactly. Well, and you can't. The thing is that it's gone to a certain point that no matter how much love and like telling them how cute they look and all of that is not going to help,
mm-hmm.
because they've already started the behavior. And it's a very lonely road that they've gone on. And it doesn't really matter the celebrities. You'll see models who have eating disorders, mm-hmm. and people love them and think they're beautiful and wonderful and that kind of thing. But they're already down the road. And eating disorders are very much a solo journey of trying to gain control.
Hmm.
So, so if you would just stop... It doesn't work. Don't do it.
But you're such a beautiful...
exactly.
If you would just... Yeah.
Yeah.
What else have we missed?
I think that's about where we're at. I mean, we can apply religion to how we can...
Let's do it.
You want to do it?
Okay. Yeah.
All right. Okay.
So how does religion help us in all this?
Oh, okay. So now, because we've kind of talked about how religion can...
Cannot help us.
Yes. So we got to throw
so,
in
so
some...
So give us some hope here. That's it. I'm leaving the church because I can't...
Yeah, I can get a lot of letters that way. I don't want that. Hate mail. I get enough of that. So mind and body... So if your mind and your body is healthy, mm-hmm. you are more likely to feel connected to God or spirituality. It's just how it... You know, if you feel okay in your mindset... then you are more likely to attend church. You're more likely to go to the gatherings and to just feel more connected to everyone and everything around you, right?
Okay.
And so that's why therapy, and you can still go to therapy and still be a good church goer and have those two
side I don't by know. Side. I don't.
It's the truth.
Wait, so I can go to a therapist and I'm okay?
Yeah.
That's not, I'm not weak. This is real.
I know it. It does not mean you're weak. It doesn't mean you should be embarrassed.
Well, but God would just fix me.
Well, here's the thing. Here's the thing. You don't have to be miserable. And God can still be there for you, even if you're healthy. Sometimes I think we feel like if we have a little bit of unhealthy stuff going on, that God will pay more attention to us or give us more blessings or something like that. Uh-huh. It doesn't need to work that way. You can be happy and healthy.
Wait a minute.
Don't tell anybody. Don't tell anybody.
Happy and healthy. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Mind blown. Keep going.
So there's that. Now, in the LDS culture, big time about scriptures.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody needs to be reading them, all that good stuff, right? So the cool thing about this that I really think is neat is that you can read the scriptures and you can get something unique out of them every single time.
Uh-huh.
Right? So, I mean,
but different parts of it kind of appeal to you, or you can get something from it that you hadn't based because the last time you read it to the time that you read it now, your mind is expanded or there's a different aspect of it or something in your life has changed. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
exactly. And so what I usually suggest if folks are in the religion and okay with this, because that can be, you know, part of the healing process, is reading the scriptures, but reading a brand new copy of it that you haven't like doodled on.
Oh, really?
Because sometimes the doodles and things can influence things from before. Like
okay.
If you read it during a different mind state kind of thing, then you can be like, oh, well, I thought this was really good. I should really think this is good again. Or I underlined this or I highlighted this for some reason.
You know, being an open canvas going, what is going to impress me? You go, that impressed me before, so you pay special attention to it.
Exactly.
That's fascinating. I've never thought about that.
So if you get a brand new copy, the missionaries are awesome about that.
Yeah.
and you get a brand new copy and you start and you reread it as you are on your healing path,
it can be
a totally new adventure for you and really resonate with your spirituality.
That's a fascinating thing that I had never considered before.
Yeah.
Because sort of in this odd LDS culture of, you know, having to show how good we are or maybe show ourselves how good we are, mm-hmm. we get these scriptures and you always have that immediate respect for the old man with the tattered scriptures and the tabs and the markings and the inserts and all that. And that's great. What a tremendous resource, right?
Absolutely.
But equally as great as being able to look at it from a completely unbiased perspective. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Look at that.
I know, see? Every once in a while.
Sister Shepherd, listen to you. Listen to you. See, it sounds good.
It does sound good.
Listen to how good it sounds.
I don't know if people call me that, but...
Think about it. Think about it.
Rebel. and then also connecting with your community, because the cool thing about the LDS Church is they have all kinds of meetings mm-hmm. outside of church.
We believe in many meetings. We have held many meetings. We currently hold many meetings, and we in the future will hold many, many meetings.
Exactly. And so you can kind of go in and try to, you know, talk to people. And there are going to be people who you really liked, and then all of a sudden they find out that you have anxiety or an eating disorder and they don't want anything to do with you. And that's fine, because that's their journey. That's what I try to... It's your journey.
Yeah. You're a bigger person than some. Others would say, then I'm not going. Forget it.
I don't know. The teenager in me still wants to egg houses. Yeah. So I can't say I'm
And maybe
person.
You should. If it's
maybe
anonymous, the bishop would never
so
know.
Bad. I would just like to note in my neighborhood, I've never egged anybody. Yeah. So
just clear record here.
Yep. Just letting everybody know. But find people in your community that you can talk to, because I guarantee there's another person who has been affected or has an eating disorder or a depression or anxiety, and it would be a relief to have somebody that they could talk to about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then it becomes an instant kind of friend for you, too.
Exactly.
I'm excited for the future episode when we have you come back, be able to talk about what it's like being raised in the state of Utah, not being a member of the church, the ugly part of that.
Yeah.
We've talked briefly some of that, but then hopefully the really positive parts about it as you make your journey towards the church.
Wait. So now I'm in the church, Ned? Like,
is your journey towards the church? Maybe.
I like
question
that.
Mark. Sister Shepherd.
Richie's already.
Listen.
Got me on board.
Come on. Boy, you don't want to be Mormon? Come on.
It's hard to resist that hairdo you got going on.
That's the worst tactic for missionary work, by the way. What, you don't want to be Mormon? Come on. Tell people again where they can find you, ask you questions, or reach out to you.
Oh, okay. So my email is jessie@blueclovertherapy.com. You can go to just the website, blueclovertherapy.com, and we have all kinds of fun stuff, articles and whatnot on there. Any other information you want me to share?
I think that's probably good.
Yeah, that's good.
Well, we hope that this episode has nourished and strengthened your body, that if you were not healthy enough to listen this week, that you will be healthy enough to listen next week, and that when the time comes, you'll be able to travel home in safety. In the meantime, we'll be saving a seat for you on the back row of the Cultural Hall.
Save me a seat. It's sure to be neat.